Hey friends, this is Millennial Musings and I am Anurag Ramchandran. Thank you so much for tuning in. So as many of you know, I work in the development sector, and prior to my current job, I used to run an NGO focused on child rights and education in rural tribal communities of India. In that journey, there was one organization that I consistently looked up to for the incredible work they were doing and the impact that they were creating all across India. And that is Magic Bus. So it's truly my honor and privilege to have an episode dedicated to bringing attention to the amazing work that Magic Bus is doing on the ground. Now let me give you a sense of what they've accomplished over the years. Since 1999, Magic Bus has transformed the lives of over 1 million children and young people who have lived in poverty, taking them from a childhood full of challenges to a life with meaningful livelihoods. And as you know, if you followed my show long enough, livelihoods and skilling, it's something that I've honestly been fixated about. And especially about how India could tap into the enormous wealth of youth that we have in this country. And so on today's episode, I have Anuj Alfonson, who leads the livelihoods program at Magic Bus, who will tell us a lot about the kind of interventions that Magic Bus is implementing on the ground, the way they've conceptualized it, the communities that they work with, and also their outlook for the future. And I do have a request of you. At the end of the episode, once you've listened through the work that Magic Bus has done and the stories that Anuj shares with us, and if you feel like you'd like to support the incredible work that Magic Bus is doing on the ground, I've included links on the show description. Please feel free to make a donation, because this, I give you my word, is actively going into the right hands. So without further ado, let's jump straight into today's episode. Thank you for tuning in, folks. As always, I'm so grateful for your support. Anuj, it's such a pleasure to have you on Millennial Musings, and I'm so excited for this conversation.
Thank you so much, Anurag, for having me. I'm equally excited, and it's a real privilege to be here talking to you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anuj, one of the main talking points that I'd say that's been like a thread across the board in this show has been the concept of how childhood transitions into adulthood, and the way that, you know, some of the challenges, the way that it manifests itself, and the way that, you know, it impacts the lives of people that are going through this, you know, transition into adulthood. Especially with Magic Bus, I feel like you're an organization that is at the forefront of, you know, working on this challenge and trying to address, you know, the adolescence issue and also those that, you know, affect livelihood. So I wanted to ask you right from the start, if you can tell us about how Magic Bus has been perceiving some of this challenge of, you know, transition, and how you guys have been working to kind of address it in India.
So the vision of Magic Bus is to move every child and youth out of poverty. This is done by equipping the children and young people in the age groups of 12 to 18 years and above with the critical life and employability skills to build agency and grow up and move themselves as well as their families out of poverty. You know, since inception in 1999, we started, Magic Bus has transformed the lives of over 1 million children and young people. Talking about, you know, the whole transition. So particularly, you know, the profiles of adolescents and young people we deal with, they come from the marginalized and underserved sections of the society, very difficult childhood. And how will these adolescents manage their transition to adulthood and how successful they are in this transition depends on what are they equipped with in terms of skills, guidance, and support. And for better and sustainable impact, Magic Bus works with the ecosystem of the children and young people, which include their parents, communities, schools, and colleges, and local institutions to ensure they act as a network of support and encouragement. So what do we do? So we have three goals to look at. One is that, you know, help them with education support so that, you know, they are able to finish their secondary education, because it's all about creating and strengthening the education base for the adolescents, which is very, very critical. The number of dropouts that we have up to elementary level, then up to secondary level and up to higher secondary level is very dismal in India, and it's very, very concerning. So we are trying to do our bit there by ensuring that, you know, through our foundational skills program, through our life skills program, through our collaborative and experiential learnings, life skills based learning program, we are able to help them, you know, keep completely engaged in the education program, and they continue and finish their education. Right. Second is, you know, the early child marriage. So that's a big sort of concern in these communities, and you know, because the livelihoods are mostly hit and there is irregular income all across. So it's important that, you know, we work with the families there and counsel them and also tell them about the risk involved. You know, that is another area wherein we work very closely with the families. Third is, you know, sustainable livelihoods. So, you know, once they finish our program, they finish sort of the journey with us, they travel the journey with us, it's important that we connect them with sustainable livelihood opportunities to take it forward from there on. So this all sort of, you know, ties together in the form of a poverty alleviation program, which we, like I just started with the statement that, you know, our program is to move every child and youth out of poverty. So we aim to do that.
Excellent, Anuj. And I think that's really, you know, Magic Bus has really showcased that having this kind of holistic thought process and holistic approach really can go a long way in helping youth especially kind of lift themselves out of poverty. But I wanted to ask you, and especially because you mentioned of those three prongs of education, you know, ending early child marriage and also providing sustainable livelihoods, the livelihoods bit actually, you know, stands out for me, especially because, you know, for the longest time, we've been hearing about the size of the youth population in India, and also this huge, you know, demographic dividend that needs to be tapped into to kind of fuel the growth in India. All these, you know, sound like huge terms and, you know, lofty ideals and goals. But what I wanted to ask you is that the situation on the ground looks very different, right? Like from all these kind of proclamations that are made to what's actually happening on the ground, what I've understood is that there is a big mismatch between the number of people that are seeking employment and the number of people that are actually equipped to get the kind of jobs and employment that are actually out there. So I wanted to ask you, especially with the groups that you're working, you know, vulnerable communities, marginalized communities, what is the ground reality when it comes to, you know, livelihoods? And again, what is Magic Bus doing on that front?
Anurag, you mentioned about the demographic dividend, and that's not sort of specific to any particular community or any particular area in India. I think it applies to the entire India. And I think it's like once in a century sort of an opportunity for a country to leverage and, you know, catapult into the next level of growth to becoming a developed country. If we are able to do so, I think by 2040, we can be a developed country. But then I think it's easier said than done. A lot right. needs to be done. If we don't really address this issue, you know, I think our demographic dividend will end up becoming a demographic liability, which will be very difficult to manage, considering, you know, the huge bulge in working age population that we will have if that is not addressed with enough skilling opportunity and connect with livelihood opportunity. We are looking at a huge social problem in the coming days. There's a lot which is happening. I will not really go deeper into all of those initiatives by the government, also by the industry now as well, because industry also has got into the game in terms of reaching out to you know, candidates directly, working with them, communities, as well as working with governments also. Now, coming to what Magic Bus is doing, so we are not trying to work in isolation. We are a partner of NSDC. We are also aligned to the larger skilling mission of India, wherein, you know, we are part of the same mission to sort of skill and connect young men and women with sustainable livelihood opportunities. So we do our bit, and we are mainly concentrated around the critical metros and industrial hubs, because that's like the first starting point wherein you have the employment available. And the idea is to sort of work with this, with the communities, as well as the young men and women from these communities, bringing them to our centers, counseling them, screening them. Career counseling is an important piece there. And once that is done, then we connect them with the program. So there is a rigorous training program that we have on life skills and employability skills. And these are not skills sort of which prepares them for the first available job opportunities. These are skills which sort of prepares them to successfully manage the first job that they get into, but also, you know, sort of take it forward from there on, because, you know, mostly then they are on their own and then they sort of figure it out. But then do they have the required skills, the required orientation to do that? So that's where we invest our time in. So we're not mainly into domain skilling or you can say trade specific skilling. We invest a lot of time in the harder part of the skill, which is about building life skills, the critical life skills which are required professionally. And this is what we've been doing. And a couple of things we definitely keep in mind, which is about the gender piece, because we ensure that, we have equal number of males and females in our programs. And you know what is the condition of the female participation in labor force. It's a dismal under 20%. At one point of time, we were about 30% earlier. At the start of this decade, but now it's dropped to, instead of increasing, it dropped to under 20%, and it's very, very concerning. So we're trying to sort of also, you know, hit that area wherein, you know, by encouraging more and more young women to come in, get trained and participate in the workforce, and not only in regular jobs, but also by picking up, you know, self-employment opportunities as well. I'll talk more about the programs that we do as we move along.
Perfect, Anuj. And I think that's very, very interesting to me that the focus is not on just skilling the individuals that are part of your programs on, you know, on a particular job or in terms of, you know, a particular domain, as you mentioned, but it's in fact to kind of more holistically empower them to be able to, you know, set them up for success going into the future. And that's very interesting to me because I feel like it's far more difficult to empower individuals and especially young people to be able to kind of have agency for themselves and take hold of their careers than it is to kind of, you know, skill them for a particular job or just get them through the door with that first job. So a follow-up question I have for you when it comes to that kind of, I think, philosophy or approach that you have with skilling is, How does it actually look like for the individuals that are going through your program, right? So when they come in, do you do like an assessment to get a sense of how, you know, they place, and then, you know, do your programs actually at that point, do you decide what programs are appropriate for them? So in general, if you could tell us about what the approach is and even maybe touch on some of the programs, I think that'll give me a better sense of, you know, what Magic Bus is doing on that front.
Sure. So, I think, you know, we have multiple issues to address, both from the supply and demand side. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we also have multiple stakeholders involved. So on one hand, we have from the beneficiary side, we have the young men and women who are first time job seekers. But we also have young men and women who are underemployed. We also have adults who are underemployed. We also have, youth as well as adults who sort of lost their jobs due to COVID. So we have multiple people to work with in the communities wherein we are. On the other side, we have employers who are, pressed for talent. They don't have the bandwidth to go out and look for. They do not know where to go out and look for. So there is definitely a clear mismatch in terms of what they want, how, when they want it, and who do they want. So we sort of come in and we sort of bridge this gap with our sustainable livelihood, you know, programs. So if I have to give you a quick brief about what all programs we currently have. So starting with, the first program that we started off with, which is a very, a natural sort of progression to our childhood to livelihood program, which is an employment linked skilling program. So here, when I say employment linked skilling program, that means that employment is at the is the real, outcome of the program here. So it is linked right with the program. So it is not just a training program. So there is an outcome in the form of confirmed employment that the person gets. So who sort of then participates in this program? So we have, youth who are in the age category of 18 to 25, men and women in equal percentage. Like I said, you know, we keep a balance in terms of admission. So we mobilize them, we talk about the program. And when we actually go to the communities, we already are very clear in terms of the opportunities available in what sector, what are these job roles, what are the salaries like, what is the eligibility criteria like, also in terms of the career path. So we are equipped with this, all this information, because we are always there in the market, scanning the market, understanding the requirements. And then we go to the communities with this information. So when we go with this information, you know, we have enough information to share, and also have, we are in a position to give clarity to the aspiring job seekers in terms of, you know, what sectors, what job roles, and where they can actually look to kind of build their careers. So we bring them to our centers. So we have over 50 centers as we speak, all across India in strategically located locations. Each sort of, center covers a good diameter of close to about 30 kilometers, of the area within the center, around the center. So, so that's something that we do. Once they come to a center, we have a robust screening mechanism to ensure that, you know, we are dealing with the most needy, beneficiary here. We are dealing with the NEET candidates. So when I say NEET, NEET,
yeah.
not in employment, education and training candidate, because they are the right fit for a full-time 2 months program. And eventually they have to have the willingness to pick up the job after the training program. So this is not
Absolutely.
Like, yeah, a training program. This is an employment-linked training program. So this happens, and then they are intensively trained on the various life skills that we have identified. There are critical 21st century life skills that we work on, call it creativity, critical thinking, collaboration, communication, on resilience, teamwork, personal leadership, and then add the employability skills to it, which is digital literacy, you know, financial literacy, spoken English. So all of this, you know, it's a wonderful sort of mix of critical skills that they sort of need, not only to get into the first job and do well there, but also sort of, you know, be more aware about where they want to sort of head to from there on. So that's our skilling program. Then we have the next
Right.
program, which is a micro entrepreneurship program. There we work with aspiring entrepreneurs. So while our work with, you know, young men and women from the underserved communities, the first impression generally people would always have is that, you know, all they want is a simple job, an entry level job. Okay, that's true to a great extent, but that's not always true. You know, you still have some percentage, a small percentage in the same category of people who still want to do something on their own. You know, they are not looking to get into a job. They want to start something small because they want to be their own bosses. And also they know that, you know, if I start something small, I can probably create something not only for myself, but also for the entire family.
Right.
So we want to also address that. And through our micro entrepreneurship program, we sort of give wings to the dreams of such aspiring entrepreneurs through our program. So as we speak, you know, we've completed training of about 125 such entrepreneurs. And out of that, about 60 to 70 of them have already set up their businesses, you know. So it's a great sort of feeling when we see these, you know, people who were just 2 months before they had nothing and they had just had dreams. And suddenly you see them, you know, manning their own enterprises, small little nano
right.
enterprises. Yeah, but it's amazing. So that's the second program that we have. The third one is a Connect with Work program, which is a digitally run employment exchange program wherein, you know, which is a volume-based program wherein we connect, you know, first-time job seekers and jobs lost youth as well as adults or even underemployed due to COVID. We connect them with immediate employment. So there is no time lost. And there is a skilling component also in it wherein we sort of brush up their, you know, the required skills with a 24-hour to about 50 hours sort of program. And then we connect them with the employment opportunities. And this sort of goes on. So this sort of runs into thousands. And this gives us an opportunity to, you know, manage the current crisis, which is there in the market, which is about unemployment and also employers struggling to find employees because, you know, there is, because of this whole COVID, there is a lot of dust around and people, we're not able to see what is the employment scenario right now. There are different versions all across. And families are struggling. They can't really wait. Also, some of them can't really wait to undergo a 2 month training program. And then, you know, because the situation is really, really bad. So what is needed right now, probably a different innovative program like this, wherein we immediately with some, you know, some brushing up of skills and a quick connect with employment, we are able to really give them a leg up. And we don't just leave there. In fact, the skilling part continues in the form of continuous learning program for them. They continue to be on a learning journey with us. E-learning app and they sort of take it forward from there on. The last program that we have is a COVID response program, which is a recovery program because, you know, COVID sort of pushed millions of people deeper into poverty. Here the unit of measurement is a household. So we work with households under this program. So what happens is, you know, wherein we have a multi-pronged approach to manage livelihoods as well as manage the future of the children, the children of the house. So what happens if livelihood is it, you know, that it has a very you know, deeper impact on all aspects of the family and most importantly on the lives of the children. So we are looking at risks like discontinuation of education. We are looking at risks like, you know, early child marriages. We are looking at risks like child labor. All of these are imminent risk. And if we don't really manage and address the livelihood challenge, these risks become reality very, very soon. And we sort of see that when we started our baseline studies, when we started our community connected studies, we started sort of seeing this. And this really prompted us to really expand this program a lot. So we are currently working with thousands of such households in helping them, first of all, recover, get back their livelihood and, recover the income, the lost income, move back to the pre-COVID income level. And also in the process, we are able to secure the future of the children. So these are some programs through which we are trying to sort of address different needs of the different types of, beneficiaries that we have, and also the market, the different needs of the markets as well.
Right, Anuj. And I think there's a lot to unpack there, and I'll probably dive into some of these in just a second. But something that you said earlier has, kind of stuck with me, especially when it comes to the gender parity, which, Magic Bus is obviously doing really well. But the situation basically in India right now, as you mentioned, is like even currently we are seeing a drop in the percentage of women participation in the workforce and, women working. But I wanted to ask from your experience and the experience of your teams, especially through all these 50 centers that you have on the ground, what in general is the hesitance that you're seeing from communities and households and families that are preventing women or the girl children or, women in general from approaching these kind of skilling programs and initiatives?
I think, when we look at communities, a lot is still traditional in terms of, men should work and women should manage the unpaid care work, be it managing the siblings or be it taking care of the household chores, or if at all, education is sort of encouraged, but it is mainly from a better prospects for marriage, so that, you're able to marry a better sort of man. So I think it's less on, okay, fine, the girl needs to really go it and build a career for self. So there are still these traditional issues which is there. I think we'll continue also, I think a lot of initiatives, a lot of work is required there. And these are some of our findings in terms of, as we see, in terms of, hesitance or some sort of a hesitation from the community side in terms of why we see lower participation of women in the workforce. Even when it comes to training, there's a lot of counseling and convincing that we have to do, not only with the, with the young women, but also with the parents, give them a lot of confidence. A lot of them have safety concerns. A lot of them have concerns with regard to, opportunities for women, the kind of opportunities which are available for women. A lot of them are concerned about also the unequal pay that women get for the same work that that the men also do. So there are other issues as well apart from the traditional ones that I just mentioned.
Yeah, and you're probably right on the fact that kind of breaking away from especially traditional mindsets and traditional thought is definitely not an easy process and one that is going to require a longer term approach. But it's great to hear that Magic Bus is in fact actively, looking for gender parity and making sure that, at least 50% of your cohorts that you bring together are do involve women. Another thing that you said that was very interesting to me is 21st century life skills. I think it's something that has had a slow burn, but right now it's at the forefront. Everyone's talking about how skills are not just technical and we need to have a more holistic approach to skills, and especially when it comes to the skills that are required in the 21st century workforce, right? So can you tell us a little more about like how Magic Bus is thinking, especially in terms of what these skills are and how to equip the youth of India with these kind of skills that are prevalent and even needed in the 21st century workforce?
Sure. When we talk about 21st century skills, we are also referring to the associated life skills. And these are skills, apart from the trade-specific skills or the hard skills, which are very, very critical these days for a person to succeed. Either the person is in an entry-level sort of job or in the junior management or the middle management, whatever that role is. I think particularly for the bottom of the pyramid sort of roles, I think it's very, very important to have these skills in place. Also considering the fact that how volatile and how uncertain the work environment is these days. So you have to use different skills so as to survive and perform. And I think survival quotient, probably is a new addition to the emotional quotient and the IQs, if we can say that, and how it has sort of gained prominence, particularly under COVID, wherein we see job losses, wherein we see trimming of workforce, wherein we see consolidation of work within companies, and people are expected to sort of take up more, do more, and work with multiple teams, work in a matrix reporting system. So all of those. So when we know that the work environment is so volatile, is so uncertain, is so complex and dynamic these days, how are we preparing our young men and women for this? You know, for them, it is anyway a culture shock when they move from a life of, I will not really say being, idling around, rather a life of comfort to an extent wherein, there are no clear, serious guidelines to sort of follow or milestones to achieve types. But on the other hand, suddenly when they move all of a sudden after 2 months program into a different work environment, which is very challenging, there are timelines to meet, there are deadlines to meet, you have to work as a team, there are expectations and job is always at stake from a performance standpoint. I think that's too much of a shock for them to really take it. So the training program that they choose to undergo should have these components. And that is one of, I think, the concerns also when we look around in the, as far as the skilling programs in the markets are concerned, most of them are highly loaded with trade specific skills. These important and critical life skills are sort of ignored or sort of not really given the due importance. So what we cover, let's say, as far as the skills are concerned, is something on teamwork, gender equality, which is very important, gender sensitivity, personal leadership, responsibility. Then we are talking about resilience, we're talking about confidence and self-esteem, we're talking about setting goals, we're talking about adaptability and flexibility, decision making, problem solving, communication, creativity, critical thinking. So these are the skills which are highly in need and should be honed and built for the person to really be prepared, not only manage self for the first available job opportunity, but also manage the career from there on.
So Anuj, it's very interesting, especially the 21st century life skills that you mentioned. And I'm thinking of a few of them specifically, like resilience and being able to bounce back and trying to kind of, pick themselves up by the bootstraps when things don't go right. And those fall into the 21st century life skills category. I think that these especially are very critical for NEET youth who, either by some external circumstances or personal circumstances do end up dropping out from their schools or being, for the lack of a better term, idle. I just wanted to ask you, what are your experiences in working with NEET youth? And if you can go a little more into their experiences specifically.
So Anurag, why we choose to work with NEET is also very important to understand, because when we look at the current youth, which is a huge sort of proportion in the overall working age population that we refer to in the demographic dividend piece, a lot of them, in fact, majority of them, they are the ones who have not really completed their education. They are sort of dropouts either from colleges or schools, or even have not really reached the secondary or higher secondary level. So how do we address their livelihood aspirations requirements? Because from an education qualification standpoint, they do fall short. But is there a way we can help them pick up skills and mainstream them into the workforce so that they can also have a career and start and move from there on? And we're talking about youth. I think the sooner we are able to make productive use of their time, the better it is. So when we did our sort of mapping of the profiles at which sort of youth we want to really work with, we decided to work majorly with youth who are 12th pass, but are not really studying full time when it comes to their graduation. So because there is a dire need for them to really get into employment right now. And though some of them may still decide to pursue their graduation through distance learning and all, but that percentage is less. Most of them, they are very clear in terms of now they want to sort of get into full-time employment. And there's definitely huge requirement in the market for that also. So the youth is also aware. So if I probably somehow reach a 12th class, I can have better opportunities. And I don't really have to really wait for even longer than that, because anyway, they can't afford to wait any longer. You know, the pressure of really getting into jobs and start earning for the families is very, very big there. So we were primarily work with youth from the background, and we also have created, you know, some sort of, you know, space for some youth who are between 10th and 12th also, some percentage, provided that they're, you know, they are at a trainable level, because, you know, there is a minimum criteria also on that level wherein we need to have, because the program is pretty much the same, even though we still have an individualized sort of approach within the training program also. And we have also created some space for even graduates from, you know, tier 3-4 level colleges who can still participate, and they are again from the marginalized sections, you know, of the society. So that's the sort of profile we currently work with, and this is one section wherein, you know, which is also in high demand, particularly in sectors like retail, IT, ITS, banking and finance, you know, so BFSI sector also at the entry level jobs, hospitality and tourism, big sort of sector, and even logistics. So there are some of these, you know, services sector, which are high employment, high growth sectors as we speak right now, who sort of require this eligibility based profile to come in and, you know, work with them. So we are sort of operating in that sort of profile. And from an aspiration standpoint also, you know, there is definitely some work required at the beginning in terms of, you know, aligning their aspiration with regard to what is offered or what is there for the taking, and how probably, right, you know, in terms of salaries, in terms of job profile. So there is some adjustment, there is some counseling, you know, all which sort of comes in to really from an expectation mapping, which is very, very important. I think particularly with the youth, we do that. And once that is done in the initial phase, I think then it is all good to go from there on.
Got it. And that's such an interesting approach that you take with that as well. But another interesting program that you guys are working on is actively helping, mentoring and building entrepreneurs. When you mentioned that, Anuj, I was really fascinated to learn more, because building entrepreneurs, or like kind of giving them the tools to succeed, I think is one of the biggest challenges that even, you know, in the high tech sectors, people are trying to crack. I wanted to know about what your approach is. And I know that you guys focus on communities and helping build micro and nano enterprises, right? So if you can tell us a little more about how you identify the people to go through this program, and how do you support them to build successful businesses and become successful entrepreneurs?
Sure. It's a very interesting program, Anurang. I think very close to my heart. Though it is a very low volume program, you know, and scale is something that I think most of the organizations are trying to dabble with in terms of how do we scale a program like this. You know, there are some programs you have to really, really think about to, you know, to really scale these programs into multi-thousands. But there are programs like these also, they start very small, and then probably, you know, once we go through the learning curve, we are able to really figure that model out. But as we speak, you know, we have worked with about 125 of these entrepreneurs, and it's been a beautiful experience for us. You know, right, it's a high impact program, very intense in nature, highly, highly engaging. And like I mentioned earlier, that, you know, the whole premise of understanding, acknowledging and respecting the aspiration of a young man and woman from an underserved community to start something on his or her own, I think is a great deal for us. You know, I think that's very humbling on one hand, and also it is very exciting for us to really, you know, pick that up and work with the youth in building this enterprise. Most of these enterprises are traditional in nature. When I say traditional, these are traditional businesses that you and I see, we generally see in and around us. These could be, let's say, a beauty parlor or a grocery store or a mobile repairing shop or a pet shop or, you know, most of it, or an eatery or something into reselling. And some of these, we have also kept room to sort of, you know, probably excite them on also exploring some innovative businesses. This could also be a little different, you know. So these are the businesses that we sort of work with them. And these are very, very small nano businesses, we would call them, which probably have a monthly turnover of anywhere between 15 to 30,000 at the maximum. So these are not, these cannot really be called micro enterprises, you know. And how we work with them is that, you know, we go, we sort of interact with a lot of them in the communities. Then we organize an entrepreneurship awareness program. So let's say we have about 300 people approaching us with their interest. Then we do an entrepreneurship awareness program with them, wherein we give them a very clear orientation on the program in terms of what this whole journey is, what is entrepreneurship and all. So after that, we get the serious candidates who are now very, very clear and who are now very clear on moving into it and picking this up as a livelihood opportunity. So let's say out of 300, we would have about 50 of them deciding finally to really undergo the program with them. Generally, that's a ratio, you know. So about 50 of them then, you know, start their training with us. And we always start with the life skills training program, because I think one thing which is very important, even in an entrepreneurship program, is a life skills program, which again is not really seen in the market. You know, probably we are one of the first organizations to really integrate both together, because, even when you have to run your own enterprise and deal with customers, life skill is very, very important. Particularly, no business sort of, you know, takes off. It takes a lot of resilience, a lot of patience, a lot of persistence and perseverance for the person to really make it happen and then slowly see the business growing. So if you don't have the right life skills with you, if you're not really trained on it, I think you'll find it really, really tough in the initial days. And one of the problems with a lot of these, enterprises, the startups, is that they sort of give up too early. You know, they're not really able to take the initial shocks and they sort of lose the steam. So that's where our program comes in, and we start off as a result, we start off with life skills, and we sort of, once we set the sort of base strong, then we bring in the business concepts training, we sort of bring in the market research training, we sort of then help work with them in terms of building their business plan. And once their business plans are ready, which is validated also by a third party agency, you know, so that, you know, it can be presented to multiple government banks or financial institutions or government schemes for additional funding. And also it has to have a certain template that it needs to follow. Once that is done, we also help them with seed money to start their enterprise. While we do help them with seed money, and also we ensure that they also put in, you know, some money from their pocket, because they have to have skin also in the game, which is very, very important. Then we also sort of guide them very well in terms of how do you also leverage the existing, you know, financial packages which are available for small enterprises like that. You know, there are schemes like Mudra schemes and all, and a lot of other banks, they also have these entrepreneurship support schemes which they can benefit. And then we help them start these enterprises, and our job does not end there, Anurag. You know, in fact, what we feel is our main job starts from there. Now that's where the real work comes in. Right. It is about keeping the new enterprise alive, and also ensure that it sustains, and not only sustains but also ensuring that it becomes a profitable unit. And that's a lot of work, you know, a lot of mentoring work, a lot of handholding that we have to do. So it's an exciting journey of about 12 months on a minimum side. It goes on up to about 24 months from an engagement standpoint also. But I think, like I said, you know, the scale model is yet to be figured out by any organization. But this is also a program which India should look at it very seriously. And this needs a lot of attention as we speak.
Absolutely. And I think, building a series of entrepreneurs and innovators, especially for any country, that's something that really propels them to the next level, right? Especially for the economy, because you need people that can create more jobs so that, you know, and continue to mentor and grow. I'm very fascinated about this, especially like the whole concept of building, you know, nano enterprises and helping people, you know, achieve their dreams of being business owners. I think that's a fantastic effort. And I'm hoping that, you know, the scalable model comes with these success stories, you know, going out into the world and everyone hearing about how well some of the participants in your program are doing. So to transition a little bit from here, Anuj, I wanted to ask, given that your livelihoods program that you're leading has so many different, you know, programs that you guys are doing, and you're working with different groups of individuals as well. So what does success look like? How do you measure success and the successful completion of a program look like also from the beneficiary side of things? So one, I want to know how at Magic Bus you look at success. And the other, I want to know what does a successful engagement look like maybe from a participant lens as well. So if you can tell us a little bit about that, that'd be great.
Sure. I think to start with, success will happen if we have a holistic approach to the intervention. If we try to do anything and everything on our own, it will not happen. It will give us probably, a temporary or a very short-term sort of success, but it will not be sustainable in nature. So we have a holistic model to our interventions. Magic Bus works with the ecosystem of the children and young people, which include their parents, communities, schools and colleges and local institutions, to ensure that they act as a network of support and encouragement. So which is very, very critical. So today we are there in these locations. There could be a point wherein, we may have to exit tomorrow, let's say, from that location, 3 years,
right,
5 years down the line, though we continue to sort of want to stay there. But there could be, a point wherein we may have to sort of exit for genuine reasons. But then what happens after that? Do they still need NGOs like Magic Bus to continue to sort of support? I think idea is to how can we enable the local ecosystem there in the communities. I think all programs have to be sustainable from that angle, which is very, very important. So that is at the core of all our interventions. Second is that there are definitely some clear output and impact indicators that we always start with. For example, if I talk about our adolescent program, 76% of our adolescents in our MB program have completed secondary education and moved to higher secondary education, as compared to 69%, which is a national average. So that means that we are doing far better than the national average. And these are the benchmarks that we want to create. And sometimes, there is a way to demonstrate also the same by doing it, by showcasing it. Talking about a livelihood program, so far we have worked with over 60,000 young people and trained and placed them in sustainable jobs. And we, we have a very healthy placement percentage of over 70%, out of which about 80% of the placed candidates, they retain their jobs. And this is one of the best in the industry. That means out of 100 people that we place, 85%, in fact, more than 85% of them, they retain their jobs end of 6 months, which is very important. And it is one of the critical, concern also in the industry right now, particularly when you look at, a lot of the other skilling programs. One of the biggest concern is that, they place the candidates somehow, it's so difficult anyway to sort of place, but somehow they manage placements, but the candidates just sort of, drop the jobs and go back. They leave for multiple reasons. So retaining them is a big concern, and everyone suffers in the process. The investment sort of goes, waste. The stakeholder is back to where he or she started from. The employer who was, waiting to get the candidates, do not have the candidates anymore. It sort of disturbs the whole manpower planning and the work planning that they have to do. So, but when we are able to really, commit to and ensure that there is a higher retention coming in, I think it gives, it brings in a lot of stability, with our employers as well, who are very, very clear in terms of what can we expect from a retention standpoint. That helps them plan better. From an salary perspective also, we have a national average of about 11,500 rupees, which is wonderful. And this is an average, at the higher side, we also have a lot of placements happening beyond 15,000, and we are talking about still the same set of youth who are just 12th pass, probably pursuing their graduation through distance learning and all. So these are some indicators that we have. We also have very, very less dropout from the program. So that means our screening process is also very stringent in terms of who we admit. And so that, these are the serious folks who eventually want to sort of, finish the program and get into employment. And as a result, we only see very small percentage of them sort of dropping out for genuine reasons. And these are sort of good dropouts in the sense like there are genuine reasons. They may have to migrate back to from where they came and all of those stuff. But otherwise, we don't see any bad dropouts in terms of, people initially said yes, and later on they said, they don't want to really pursue sort. So these are some of the, impact indicators that we sort of follow. Attendance is one to ensure that there is continuity in learning.
Right.
And then what we have also started, Anurag, is of interest also. I don't think there is anyone else which organization is doing it. I think there are some talks to sort of organize this, consolidate this, which is a career progression study. So that means that, we worked with, let's say, a cohort of youth back in 2017, 18 or 16, 17 or 18, 19. We placed them, we tracked them for about 6 months, 12 months, ensured that they are in job, they're doing well, great. But where are they now as we speak? How are they doing? And our whole idea of poverty alleviation, because that's our core, that's our vision, to actually move every child and youth out of poverty. And we want to really know the sustainable career that they got into, did it really help them, in helping their families move out of poverty? Did it help them to really, get a higher salary, get a better job in the process? Did it really help the person, get assets or, build assets in the process? So we are starting that study as we speak to really see where our youth are. And this study is very important, for us to know. From an impact standpoint, I think this tracking will give a lot of insights and inputs to all of us, all for implementation sure, agencies, yeah. all skilling agencies to really get their interventions right and also see where the impact is happening also. Since we have just started this, I think I don't have any clear inputs to share right now, insights to share right now. I'm sure next time when we connect, I will have loads of insights to share with you in terms of what came out.
Yeah, that would be so curious to know, Anuj, because especially over the like longitudinal period, right? Like whether or not the success of the program translates into, longer term success for the individuals going through it. And in other ways, also building a community, right? Like if you can look at it from an alumni perspective, if new aspirants want to kind of look at, okay, these people have gotten themselves out of poverty 5 years ago by doing A, B, C or X, Y, Z steps. It kind of sets a very, very interesting and very clear precedent for what the program can do for, aspiring individuals as well who want to join the programs that you guys are administering. But while we, begin to wind down this conversation, Anuj, I wanted to ask something that I've been very curious about, especially since COVID and the lockdowns and, many, many employers being affected as a result of it. How have you managed to kind of have conversations with employers to keep the flow of keeping their employees that have gone through your program or hiring more, especially given, some of the economic downturn or some of the negative impacts of COVID and the lockdowns that have affected several employers at that?
COVID, I think, definitely, came in as an unpleasant surprise to pretty much everyone in this world. And it so severely impacted particularly people from the underserved and underserved communities. They were trying somehow to sort of, through multiple interventions, trying to manage stuff and move. But all of a sudden, when COVID comes, all your plans go for a toss and you do not know what to do or you do not know what hits you. I think one of our first approach was, I'll come to the employer side, but one of the first approach was to sort of reach out to the communities to understand the impact of COVID. Because without really knowing and hearing from them that what's the impact of COVID on your lives, it's difficult to really plan an intervention. It's difficult to also, work with them, help them, and also probably share these inputs with other fellow agencies, as well as with government agencies so that we can get our interventions right. So that was one of the first steps that we did last year, immediately after lockdown to see, okay, fine, the dust is sort of settling down now after the lockdown. And where are we now? What is the impact? I think we got some great insights in terms of where the focus should be, what's been the impact like. And the survey that we did was crazy in terms of, the insights that we actually got, in terms of the job losses, in terms of the issues in the family, in terms of what the adolescents and the youth were thinking and the fear and the anxiety that they were experiencing and all of those stuff. And also the fear for future in terms of, what if COVID sort of sustains. So coming to the employer side, because we, work with a lot of employers and we are sort of one of their trusted partners in terms of, helping them with talented manpower, skilled manpower, because, our candidates are very much in demand for the life skills that they sort of come with and which sort of commits a longer stay, a better stay. They are performers. Most of them, they are also awarded, rewarded, recognized, faster than their peers. So they're sought after, so we command a good respect among our employers. But on the other side, COVID impacted them also and vacancies were, were far and few. We had to really struggle hard to also find placements, but you know, our relationship with the employers really helped us to continue to sort of explore work from home opportunities. It cannot just be you know, a one-sided sort of effort which will really give result here. I think the employers also needed help from implementation agencies like MagicBus to really figure it out, because everyone was like in a maze. You know, people did not know what to do. So even the employers who had the money, who had jobs to offer, but then even they were very unclear in terms of, you know, how do we manage the situation? Where do we go and look for? But we still need people. We still have to continue our businesses. So business continuity was pretty much everywhere there. But then how do we sort of work it? I think the collaboration, you know, sort of went to the next level, and in terms of joint planning, joint, looking at the whole virtual way of reaching out to candidates, interviews, sessions with them, and exploring a lot of work from home opportunities. And we also sort of encouraged our youth to sort of explore a lot of these opportunities. And in fact, some of them, Anurag, were new also, that our youth were not also exposed to, you know. So that also gave us an opportunity to probably understand these opportunities also, you know, well, and how work from home opportunities would really, you know, come out as. So it was an interesting exercise. We also did a survey with the employer to also understand the impact of COVID on them and what are their plans in terms of hiring, because that also needs to really be kept in mind while we sort of look at realigning our program with regard to, you know, the industry requirements at the end of the day. That is very important.
Absolutely. And I think this makes for a good transition to the next question and perhaps final question I have.
Sure.
Basically, now that, you know, COVID has happened and you're exploring these new kinds of connections and synergies, and you know, the workplace is evolving in many ways and was on a trajectory to evolve anyway. But let's project into the future a little bit, Anuj. So let's say 5 years from now, what is it that you think MagicBus will be doing with, you know, the kind of communities you're working with? What is this livelihoods program going to look like for MagicBus, let's say a few years down the line? You know, just let's project a little bit into the future and see what holds for us over there.
From a numbers perspective, if we have to, you know, look at the number of lives you want to sort of impact, we have sort of transformed over 1 million lives so far, and we want to sort of, you know, our vision is to sort of, you know, work with about 30 million in the coming years. So that's something that we have really largely set ourselves as one of the goals to look at. Apart from that, you know, there are other indicators that we continue to work on. And these indicators, like the education support program that we have in the adolescent fund, wherein we have to ensure that, you know, we probably take it from the 76% secondary education completion, can we take it higher? So we'll always have, you know, we'll continue to create a room for improvement there, and continue to also showcase it as something which is achievable by other institutions also, you know, because that is an area which needs a lot of focus. Can we, and our objective is also to sort of have a similar sort of percentage with regard to completion of higher secondary education as well. When it comes to child marriage, you know, marriages still do happen, you know, all across communities. You know, can we really make a very, very strong dent there? You know, can we bring out additional interventions or supported interventions to see that, yes, this is not happening at all. And there is a greater awareness in the communities that we work with when it comes to early child marriage or even child labor, as a matter of fact. The other area is that, you know, we want to come across as a holistic livelihood solutions for all the communities we work with. That means that, you know, be it the young man or woman of the house or the adult member or someone who is employed but underemployed or someone who sort of has lost job or someone who wants to sort of, you know, wants to start something on his own or the housewife of the wife who wants to continue to sort of, you know, support the family, but also want to sort of, you know, create that additional income through some opportunity from a livelihood standpoint, and also probably create a small little career for self. So we want to really sort of be there in that holistic livelihood solution space and be, you know, have enough high impact programs which can be extended to not only the locations that we are currently in. We are in about 22 sort of states, 22, 23 states in about 80 districts, but we want to sort of be there wherever the need is, you know, spread ourselves more. And not only that, but also go deeper wherever we are.
Absolutely, Anuj. And I have no doubt that Magic Bus is definitely going to be on the path to achieving this and more, as it always has over the past several years, continuing to set the bar for what organizations of its scale and size should be aiming to accomplish and impact in the lives of youth and adults at the same time. But Anuj, such a pleasure having you. So great to hear about the incredible work that Magic Bus is doing. I wish both Magic Bus and you the very best in accomplishing all the goals that you've set going into the future and seeing real impact and tangible impact that is going to like transform the landscape of the youth in India. So thank you so much for joining Millennial Musings. It's truly been an honor.
Thank you, Anurag, for having me again. And I feel really privileged to be a part of this journey with you, small little journey. I hope the relationship continues, and I wish all the best for this initiative of yours. It's really amazing, I must say.